Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, social critic, and mentor. And she uses all of those skills to help us navigate through the conversations that we need to have, but frequently shy away from. It's another Tuesday and time for your conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. Elizabeth, what's on your mind today?
Hello, Brad. On my mind today is the 55th anniversary of Earth Day. And I'm a little disappointed that wherever I've looked today so far, I'm not seeing a lot of celebration or news or any recognition that today is Earth Day, which is mostly, it's even more disheartening here on the Central Coast because we are the center of the full founding of Earth Day. So what's on my mind today is to talk about how it is that we can learn to protect what we love without getting discouraged, how we can create a practice around honoring Mother Earth and Mother Nature in the same way that we practice other sacred rituals, and how just in one generation, if we change the way we talk about the planet and climate, we can change the attitude of our entire population. Because I think when it comes to protest or awareness or, you know, bringing to the forefront information that's important, people get incredibly overwhelmed with the magnitude of trying to get a message out, and then they tend to sink inward. Well, I can't make a difference. I'm just one person. I'm just one sign. You know, it's just one little moment on the tiny part of the planet. But I want to talk about the foundations, the why Earth Day was started, to kind of highlight how incredibly powerful one sign amongst many can be. So in case you don't know, Earth Day exists because there was a gigantic, massive oil spill in Santa Barbara in 1969. Such a giant environmental catastrophe that there were officials from all over the country doing flyovers to see how great the devastation was. And one of the people who did a flyover was a senator from Wisconsin, Gaylord Nelson. And as he went through this, he said he had this profound feeling of sadness and desperation and a desire to make sure that we started to raise awareness about environmental issues. And he wanted to figure out a way to bring this to the national attention because it was a series of things. You know, it wasn't just the oil spill, but it was, you know, a fire on Lake Erie because there were so much pollutants that had been put into the lake. They all caught fire. And of course, Rachel Carson's book, Silent Spring, had been released in 1962. So by 1969, with the series of environmental disasters, the Santa Barbara oil spill was just kind of the straw. And so Gaylord Nelson worked with other members of the Senate, and they said, you know, the success of the Vietnam protests, the ability to bring all of these protesters together, really is what put the pressure on the government to pull out of Vietnam to end the war. And so let's use the same strategy as the anti-war protesters to bring about this awareness. And so Gaylord Nelson and his group came together, and they were able to coordinate around the nation these protests. And they chose April 22nd, 1970, because traditionally it was around spring break. So they knew that a lot of college students would be out and about and not have, you know, classes they had to worry about. And remember, this is before the internet. There was not social media to spread like wildfire this information. This was word of mouth from campus to campus, from person to person, phone call banks, phone banks, you know, getting the information out. And on April 22nd, 1970, 20 million people took to the streets. It was the largest political demonstration in U.S. history at that time, all by word of mouth. And it was such a powerful gathering of people that it led to the creation of the Environmental Protection Agency. And that was founded by President Nixon. And in 1970, we also had the landmark laws of the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, the Endangered Species Act, all in response to the massive amount of people who came forward on that very first Earth Day. And it's continued every year since. In 1990, it actually became a global recognition, a global celebration, and a global opportunity to raise awareness about the importance of speaking out and protecting the environment. The other piece of this is the connection to Santa Barbara. So, full disclosure, I'm a gaucho, UCSB graduate.
Go Gauchos.
Go Gauchos. And UC Santa Barbara is essential to the whole creation of the environmental studies movements around the world. Now, the very first environmental studies program was in Middlebury College in Vermont, founded in 1965. But in 1969, in response to the oil spill in Santa Barbara, a group of 21 faculty members on campus, and they collectively called themselves the Friends of the Human Habitat, and they came together. The faculty were from the geology department, geography department, engineering department. There was an economist, a biologist, and a historian, very interdisciplinary, came together with the same concern, and they decided to create this department to, you know, to raise awareness and to create a whole generation of new I don't know if you call it a new discipline, a new group of people that would take on the protection and understanding of what it means to have environmental awareness. So that started in 1970. UCSB currently has one of the strongest, largest, and most impactful environmental studies programs in the world. They have over 7,300 alumni, all starting from this one group of faculty members. Just 21 faculty members had this vision. And part of the faculty at that time was Roderick Nash, and he is considered the founding environmental studies professor. And one of the pieces he added to this whole movement was writing the Santa Barbara Declaration of Environmental Rights in 1970. And this Declaration of Environmental Rights was read into the congressional record and actually helped pave the way for the passage of the laws, the environmental protection laws. And I want to read to you the entire Declaration of Environmental Rights because I want us to understand how we got to where we are. All right. The 1970 Santa Barbara Declaration of Environmental Rights. All people have the right to an environment capable of sustaining life and promoting happiness. If the accumulated actions of the past become destructive of this right, men now living have the further right to repudiate the past for the benefit of the future. And in its manifest that centuries of careless neglect of the environment have brought mankind to the final crossroads. The quality of our lives is eroded and our very existence threatened by our abuse of the natural world. Moved by an environmental disaster in the Santa Barbara Channel to think and act in national and world terms, we submit these charges. We have littered the land with refuse. We have encroached upon our heritage of open space and wild land. We have stripped the forests and the grasses and reduced the soil to fruitless dust. We have contaminated the air we breathe for life. We have befouled the lakes and rivers and oceans along with their shoreline. We have released deadly poisons into the earth, air, and water, imperiling all life. We have exterminated entire species of birds and animals and brought others close to annihilation. We are overpopulating the earth. We have made much of the physical world ugly and loud, depriving man of the beauty and quiet that feeds his spirit. Recognizing that the ultimate remedy for these fundamental problems is found in man's mind, not in his machines, we call on societies and their government to recognize and implement the following principles. We need an ecological consciousness that recognizes man as member, not master, of the community of living things sharing his environment. We must extend ethics beyond social relations to govern man's contact with all forms of the environment itself. We need a renewed idea of community which will shape our urban environments that serve the full range of human needs. We must find the courage to take upon ourselves as individuals responsibility for the welfare of the whole environment, treating our own backyards as if they were the world and the world as if it were our backyard. We must develop the vision to see that in regard to the natural world, private and corporate ownership should be limited so as to preserve the interest of society and the integrity of the environment. We need greater awareness of our enormous powers, the fragility of the earth, and the consequent responsibility of men and government for its preservation. We must redefine progress toward an emphasis on long-term quality rather than immediate quantity. We therefore resolve to act. We propose a revolution in conduct toward an environment which is rising in revolt against us. Granted, the ideas and institution being established are not easily changed, yet today is the first day of the rest of our life on this planet. And that was the Declaration of Rights, of Environmental Rights, that was written in 1970 and was the founding document for the UC Santa Barbara Environmental Studies Department. And so today, on this 55th anniversary of Earth Day, we're going to have a conversation about how do we live up to this proposal, this idea, this call towards individuals and governments to do more to protect and to recognize that our relationship to the planet needs to be altered. There doesn't feel like we have a lot of control over a lot of things these days, but when you look at the 20 million people who walked out their door in 1970 with no social media to buoy them, but just masses of people and the ability to change the course of history at that point, then we have nothing to lose but to try it again. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and you're welcome to be part of our conversation today. Our phone number is 805-781-3875. You can also send me an email after the show to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram and leave me a message there as well. You can listen to previous shows by visiting kcbx.org and look under our News Talk tab and find all of the shows. Or if you'd like to podcast the show and listen at your convenience, you can find us wherever it is you find your podcasts, even Spotify. Go look for A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, hit subscribe, and we will be there for you to listen to at your convenience and hopefully share with others. So that's where we are today. I'm going to take a quick break, come back. I'm going to introduce you to a special guest that is here to share her worldly wisdom about how we can organize and come together and actually do something that makes a difference. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I almost started announcing the title of the song, Creedence Clearwater Revival, Green River.
I was thinking the very same thing, and then just how special all that music really is.
I love it so. I know. I almost fell back into my DJ days. But here we are on Earth Day, 55th anniversary. My guest today is Ara Castello. Ara is a practicing artist, leadership coach, and community organizer. Her current modalities include music, strategic communication, group facilitation, meditation, and movement. Ara was born in Fresno, but was raised on the Central Coast of California, graduated from Stanford University, where she studied philosophy, management science, and she performed with the Stanford Spoken Word Collective. Ara is a founding member of the Napoma Oak Alliance, the adult organizer for the youth-led Central Coast Student Coalition, and assistant to YTT Northern Chumash Tribal Chair Mona Olivas Tucker. So, Ara, I'm so glad that you're here today because I feel like this topic is kind of defines who you are.
Oh, okay.
Wow. No pressure.
Yeah, no, what a real honor and blessing to be here with you.
Thank you.
Your show is such a resource. You're such a beacon of light.
Aww.
In this community. I really want to celebrate you. And yeah, it's actually a dream come true to be able to have a conversation like this with you on the 55th anniversary of Earth Day. In some ways, my younger self never could have imagined, and in other ways, I feel her presence here with me being like, see?
We knew we'd get here. Well, then let's talk about how you got here. So you were raised, on the Central Coast. So I want to kind of follow that through line for you that brought you to where you are today.
Oh, yeah.
So the floor is yours.
Okay. I always love to start with acknowledging my ancestors, especially the ancestors whom I personally know. And so I am the granddaughter of Rudy Savala and Mary Ellen Savala. Rudy Savala passed last year, and so I'm living his legacy right now. He was a migrant farm worker. He and his family traveled all throughout California following the crops. He was one of 12 children. They lived in tents in just really extremely challenging conditions. And he ultimately became the first person in his family to go to college. And he studied math and physics, and no one wanted to hire a Mexican math teacher. And so fortunately / unfortunately, he ultimately became a lawyer.
Wow.
I would say fortunately. Yeah. And in that capacity, he was very involved in the farm workers movement. And so that absolutely informs who I am. He was always intentionally instilling the lessons of that work in me and in my sense of self and my sense of relationship to the world. And my grandmother, in her own right, she is one of three women who founded the San Joaquin River Conservancy. I hope I'm saying that right. And anyways, they were instrumental in protecting the San Joaquin River in Fresno from agriculture, industrial agriculture, as well as, you know, rampant development that didn't acknowledge the rights of nature, as you so wisely pointed to. So those are my grandparents. And my parents, too, Kathy Savala Castello, and my father, Dr. Paul Castello. So Kathy is, amongst many things, really in tune with nature and always planting and loves to be outside and has a beautiful garden and grows food and fruits and vegetables for us, and always has, at least as long as I can remember. And my father is a physician, and so I consider him as a medicine person. Mm-hmm. So he literally practices Western medicine, and I think so much about the tradition of medicine has to do with bringing us into wholeness, bringing us into relationship not only with ourselves, our physical body, but also with the body, which is Mother Earth. So that's who I am, or that's who made me. And then on my own journey, I think that I'll speak to my mixedness here.
Okay.
So I outlined a couple of different lineages, and I definitely feel myself as a mixed person of mixed descendancy. So that's to say, I have ancestry that is, maybe we would call it Mexican, I would say native to the North Americas. And I have ancestry of people who are native to Europe and came here to what is now called the United States of America. And I'm the result of these, of these strange, you know, mysterious, beautiful unions. And I definitely experienced, especially growing up here on the Central Coast, I experienced the world as a mixed person, which is to say, I did not fully understand the both the gifts and the challenges of each of my lineages. So I don't, I went to Napomo High School. When I went to Napomo High School, I graduated in 2008. I experienced it as a very segregated place. There was definitely like mostly, not exclusively, but mostly white kids. I'm doing quotation marks, people of European descent, and then mostly Hispanic, predominantly from what is now called Mexico, kids in two different areas of the school. And so me as a mixed person, it was disorienting to the point of resulting in some habitual disassociation from who I am. How do I relate? So even though I worked really hard and I experienced a lot of success, by the time I went to college, I was very ripe first of all, I was very ripe for the consequences of disassociation, which ultimately resulted in me experiencing significant mental health struggles. And I was also very open to and ready for an awakening.
Yeah, which because you had to crack open that space.
Yes, I did.
Something new to inhabit you.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm so grateful. I had a really brilliant visiting artist teacher at Stanford. His name is Mark Gonzalez, and he was instrumental in introducing me to I would say the history, but we could call it different histories of the world, of the planet, of what's happening, what happened before I came here, what's happening now. And through that awakening, that was the beginning of my healing process. Mm-hmm. So healing from the disassociation that is so prevalent throughout so much of our culture here in the United States.
It's almost like everyone is told they have to choose a side, right? Choose a story, choose an identity.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And thank goodness it's not physically possible for me to do that. Even my house is split. My father generally in the past has voted Republican. As you can imagine, my grandparents and my mom in the past have voted Democrat. And so in many different ways, I have had no choice but to integrate and to understand where is the common ground, where is the shared reality.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, through that healing process, that awakening process, simultaneous expanding and addressing the wound, I was ultimately, I would say, really led to true love. Mm. I was led to true love, maybe some way stations, including meditation, which is a huge part of my life. And through true love, I was able to really come back into myself, into my body. And as soon as I had any sort of traction, stability in my body, then it was, it's not that I came back to the earth. It's I could hear again the guidance of the earth and all of these very wise beings who surround us, even amidst the concrete and amidst the noise. And so I'm now in the process of deepening my humility and my ability to listen and to receive that guidance and to not only heed it, well, not only hear it, but also to heed it and to be led by nature.
Because I imagine that when you went into Stanford, you were on a different track than where you ended up.
This is true.
Right?
Nice. Yeah. Insightful. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I studied both philosophy and management science. I started in management science because I wanted to go into finance. I wanted to be a management consultant. I wanted to work for Bain or McKinsey, and I wanted to have a lot of money, and I wanted to buy fast cars. And that's what I was about. That wasn't all that I was about, but that was
motivator.
A big part of what I was working towards. And fortunately, I was, and this is where humility comes in, because it was really through no effort of my own. It was just by the grace of my destiny that I was sort of forced to reevaluate what I was working towards and why. And so, yeah, absolutely. I knew I wanted to study philosophy from the very beginning. I then felt empowered to complete my degree in philosophy. I studied philosophy of mind, philosophy of language, fair amount of ethics, inevitably mixed up in there. And yeah, I would say probably from when I was 20 or so, which is that's the exact time I had to really reckon with, am I mentally well? Am I emotionally well? The answer at that time was like, no. You know, I was in this very quote unquote privileged place, and in some ways the epicenter of the civilized world, again, in quotation marks. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't thriving.
Right.
Not at all. So again, I had the grace of being able to awaken and reevaluate what is actually supporting my life here on this planet.
Mm.
And it's definitely not McKinsey or Bain or the
although
banking
that would be
system.
One of the stories that we very, you know, enthusiastically teach.
Yes.
If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and my guest today is Ara Costello, practicing artist, leadership coach, and community organizer. And we're exploring kind of your growth into finding your way to community organizing after the short stint of maybe following the whole more traditional kind of American dream path.
Yes.
That's expected. And so you have this awakening, you come back to the Central Coast, and now how have you found this voice?
Mm.
Because I think what I'm kind of leading you towards is I want other people to hear this and realize that they also have other voices that are calling out to them.
Yes.
So, So what has it led you to do with your time here?
Oh, that's beautiful. Well, first of all, yes, I'm literally calling out to you now. My name is Ara. I live in Napomo. Let's be friends. I described this awakening process, a rude awakening when I was 20. And then it wasn't like I just in 1 second just exactly. changed everything about myself. I did go work in Silicon Valley. I worked at Google. I worked at Patreon. I worked at Eventbrite. I worked at a number of startups in between. Saw a lot. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I went and worked in Hollywood, and I worked for a music manager who was managing major pop acts. So
you were a success.
In some ways, yes. You know, I've seen a lot. I've yes. been really lucky to see a lot. And mostly what I took from those experiences was a profound sense of disillusionment of seeing the all that glitters is not gold. And I started to simultaneously, because I had this beautiful true love relationship with my husband, Miarden, now husband Miarden. I was also getting the experience of what truly does feed me, what feeds my spirit, what also keeps me healthy and well and harmonized and balanced. And so and that empowered me and bolstered my sense of confidence, having just, I mean, that's not the only beautiful relationship I have, but it's been very important. Mm-hmm. And so having one strong relationship empowered me to get more curious about what is it that I actually desire to do? Not what do I think I have to do? Right. What am I currently like? What do I need to do to earn money right now? Like, okay, this is what's going on now, but what do I actually want? And beginning to call that in. So by the time I came back to the Central Coast, which was never my conscious intention, to be honest, mm-hmm. I thought I was going to move to LA. Mm-hmm. another magical series of events, including the pandemic, and I'm like, oh, I'm here to stay. Thank my lucky stars. Mm-hmm. I'm so lucky. I'm so blessed in this way. To be here now. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I came back. I didn't have like a huge social network. Actually, my husband's father had a major stroke. He had to travel back to New York. He was gone for a long time. So I was hanging out by myself a lot. Mm-hmm. And I was still going through my healing process and you know, working through everything that happened throughout my entire life, my 20s, et cetera. And so I really turned to, I started going on walks. Mm. I started going on walks, and I left my phone at home. You know, I told someone where I'm going. Practice safety. But I started going on walks, and I started just, first of all, practicing listening to intuitively, or like, where do I feel called to walk? In which direction? Should I walk fast? Should I walk slow today? Do I need to walk far? Should I go high up? Should I go down low, et cetera? And then I started to notice all the living beings around me, the birds, the trees, the grasses, the bees, all these beautiful living creatures with their own universes unto themselves. And I started sitting with the oak trees regularly. Mm-hmm. And it was sitting with the oak trees that I really felt held in a way, even more so than I've felt held by my ancestors living and otherwise, by my husband in my marriage. To be held by the earth was the most profound healing experience.
Spiritual,
absolutely.
People talk about, you know, going into a church or
yes.
other sacred institutions where they say they feel it, but it's not often that people will express that being on earth within the trees can have that same
yes.
impact. And also I have to note that all the journeys that you had in the Bay Area through all the startups and moving to Los Angeles, in the mental health world, although you were struggling, the idea would be, well, we'll just get you medicated so that you can keep going and doing the important things, which is your work.
Oh, yeah.
And so it must have been challenging to kind of let that noise go. Or maybe it was the pandemic that kind of forced you, because – you know, the normal story we have in society is that you're a success. You went to Stanford. You have all these great high-end jobs. You're doing these amazing things. And you have some mental health issues. So we'll just patch you up so you can keep doing the work.
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, I definitely tried. Yeah. I tried those strategies.
That coming back. So I'm sorry. I kind of swerved you off because it just, as a therapist to me, I was like, oh, I can see how this story could have had a whole different trajectory.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you find yourself back here kind of sitting amongst the trees, and you've kind of fallen into my hope for this hour, which is, can we develop that sacred connection to Mother Earth. Can we teach that to the younger generations? Not that we're throwing away the older generations, to make real change, we have to start young generationally because, you know, children are born with only 3/4 of their brain fully developed.
Yeah.
And it's said that the development of those last part of a child's brain happen in the first 5 years. And we talk about that, why early childhood education is important. But there's also evidence to say that that last part of the child's brain to be developed should be done out in nature. That when children are outside, when they're all ages, but mostly when they're little, they're looking at bugs. They stare at them. They look at the leaves. You know, they put everything in their mouth, that there is this development of the connection between the human and earth in those first 5 years. If children are out touching, eating, tasting, looking at, examining, and as that brain fully forms, that's what brings the whole connection between human and earth together. And we lost that along the way. If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and my guest today is Ara Costello, and we're celebrating the 55th anniversary of Earth Day with a conversation about what being a part of the Earth and how being an activist for the Earth is something that's important to us both. And we're going to take a quick break, but come back and open up our phone line so you too can be part of our conversation right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Whenever my head starts to hurt, before it goes from bad to feeling worse, I turn off my phone, I get down low, and put my hands in the dirt. I try to stop the world from moving so fast, try to get a grip on where I'm at, and simplify this dizzy life, and put my feet in the grass. I'm going back to the earth, I'm going back.
Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. All right, Ara, so let's talk about kind of that sacred connection you felt. And I talked about the research that shows that young children, that development of the brain is really connected to their creating that development to the earth. How does that translate to a bigger story?
That's such a good question.
And how did you use your awakened experience of the oak trees and that new awakening to what mattered to you to become the community organizer and artist that you are today?
Thank you so much. So where we last left off, I'm sitting with various oak trees who become my friends. I mean, I would use the language, it might be presumptive that they're my friends. I don't know if they consider me their friend. I have pledged my friendship to them. And so I think the first, for me, it was also a reclamation of a practice of prayer. Mm. So as you can imagine, I'm Mexican-Italian origin, was raised Catholic, and, you know, had my own experiences with the church. And so as an adult coming back into spirituality and into the power of prayer was its own sort of tumultuous journey. And I'm so grateful that I was able to navigate that, because it's really being in nature. And it doesn't have to be on a hike or in some, you know, huge expanse of pristine, quote unquote, land. Finding any tree or any, even a piece of grass, if you really hold it in reverence and ask for help in humility, that piece of grass can support you and support us. So healing some of the wounds I've experienced, and perhaps they were intergenerational around, you know, the Catholic Church, and then coming back into a reclaimed practice of prayer, it's sitting with the tree and praying. Mm-hmm. And so what I mean when I say prayer is really having, again, my favorite word, having the humility to acknowledge what it is that I need help with, what it is that I do not got, I don't have control over, I don't have a handle on, and I need assistance with. And even just the simple acknowledgement of what is it that I need help with in that intentional space with the witnessing and the accompaniment of trees or grass, or like I said, a blade of grass, a single flower, is so, so powerful, because right then and there, I'm acknowledging I'm not the only one here. I'm not the only consciousness present. And in that, there's so much joy. There's so much safety. There's so much relief. Even just a second 2 seconds of feeling that togetherness, in contrast to what one of my favorite practitioners, Sarah Payton, would call alarmed aloneness, to soothe that alarmed aloneness with that sense of togetherness can open up expanses of what is possible without, you know, strain or having to exert, you know, use your energy to force something to come to be. So it kind of just emerges. And again, it can be even 5 seconds of sitting with a tree, having the humility to pray, which is acknowledge what it is you need help with, and ask for assistance, which is automatically to acknowledge that there are other beings there, visible and invisible. That is something everyone can go do today. Whether you live in an apartment complex or you live out in the boonies, you know, find that blade of grass or find that tree. Or even if you can't get to a blade of grass, if you're sitting in your room and you can close your eyes and imagine a blade of grass you've ever been with before, or a tree or a special place or the ocean, and take yourself there and ask for assistance. That is the alchemy that I think we need so deeply right now.
Well, and in the idea, kind of the macro idea then, is that if we can fall in love with ourselves within that natural world and recognize that we're not alone, you know, isolation, alienation are such big pieces of our mental health crisis right now, that when people are surrounded in the natural world and really quiet, you all of a sudden have this almost mystical feeling of being held, as you mentioned.
Yes.
But then you would take that, you know, kind of experience, and then you're able to connect in other ways, right?
Yes.
Once you love something, then you feel inspired to act on its behalf.
Yes.
And part of the feminist movement, kind of going back, part of the feminist movement, the eco-feminist movement, is about speaking out for and protecting those that cannot speak out for and protect themselves.
Yes.
So the non-human inhabitants then require us to fall in love so that we even feel motivated to protect.
Yes.
So what does that look like? I know I'm asking, I'm giving you a hard one on this.
Yeah.
Because I want people to not feel so overwhelmed. I want people to understand that 20 million people, we hit mass numbers at some point, it forces change, and to not give up. So how do people have hope, and how did you find, you know, taking this love that you found, this reverence, and turned it into action?
Oh, absolutely. Okay, yeah. I'll make it more concrete just in my story.
So well, I just don't want to run out of time.
Yeah, yeah. No, so I'm out in the Oak Groves regularly seeking support, receiving support, and then realizing, you know, wow, I'm getting so much from this community. From, you know, I think there's so much emphasis when we talk about aloneness on human accompaniment, and not enough emphasis on accompaniment by our non-human relatives. So I'm getting so much. And I start to realize, like, wow, I really value reciprocity. I should at least I don't know how. Let me acknowledge that I don't know what to do.
Okay.
And that's okay.
That's fair.
Originally, right? Mm-hmm. I still, not that I know now, but I definitely didn't know then. Let me acknowledge and just be with and accept myself for not knowing what to do and for feeling overwhelmed. And then again, I use this word prayer, but it's really just, I put my hands on the ground and said, thank you so much. You've given me so much beyond measure. And if there's anything I can do for you, nature, trees, waterways,
Mother Earth.
I am available for it, assuming that it's in alignment with my highest benefit. I like to add a little caveat. I make myself available as a vessel for whatever it is you need me to do. I'm here. And I didn't do that just one time. I did it, you know, many times because I was receiving so much. Picture me out in a field, you know, on my knees with my hands in the ground doing this requires us, again, the humility to be a little silly, to just try something, to not take ourselves so seriously, even again, just 1 minute. And then it was through that process. Next thing I know, it wasn't like I had to, you know, create a plan in my mind and then execute that plan. It was just, oh, I saw a sign for a town hall in Napomo, and they're talking about this upcoming development, and it's going to possibly result in the destruction of 3,000 oak trees. And wow, I really value the oak trees, and I just made myself available to help them. So I'll just go see what that's like. And I went to that meeting. I ended up speaking at that meeting, and I met a bunch of other people who, for on their mysterious, beautiful journeys had been drawn to that place. And I started having conversations and different people invited me to other meetings, et cetera, et cetera. And so it started to take on a life of its own. And it wasn't like I needed, as one individual person, one tiny little brain, my brain is tiny, mm-hmm. to figure it out. I just made myself available and then, kept showing up. Mm. Kept showing up to those little sparks. And then, so through that, I've learned a lot. You know, it is actually serious work in some ways, in that I've had to be, I've had to really invest in my skill set and continue to grow. It's not like, I still meditate every day. How about mm-hmm. that? I'll put it like that. I meditate twice a day, every day. And that's because there's lots of things we can do. One of them is heal your relationships with the people around you. Mm-hmm. And then when we do that, inevitably, we start to get the support we would need to resource our wildest dreams and our best ideas. So whether that's making a sign to go to a protest, or maybe there's something else that wants to come through that you want to create, something you want to bring into the world rather than resist what already is. Mm-hmm. When we have the support of the relationships around us, it's no longer so overwhelming. It ends up becoming more and more fun.
Right. The gathering of the energies,
yes,
start to build on itself. Everything feels a little wooey, but yes, it's so fundamental,
yes,
to being a human being.
Yes.
This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and our number is 805-781-3875 if you'd like to be part of our conversation. And is this Bing?
Yes. Hi.
Hi. How are you? Thanks for calling in today.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I've been really enjoying listening to your program, and I just wanted to offer a snippet of hopefulness in terms of example.
Please
in
do.
In terms of activism.
Please do.
And a lot of people are familiar with the Patagonia brand.
Yes.
Of camping clothes. Their flagship store is in Ventura. But if anyone's listening to this, if you research the owners and some of the earliest staff, they were involved in the creation over years and a lot of difficulty, political difficulty, in creating the Patagonia National Park, which became a reality in 2018. So, I mean, in terms of people who want to get involved and see sometimes the difficulties and, you know, the political difficulties and the possibilities of, yes, making mass change, because the Patagonia National Park is huge.
Yes, it is.
It's two countries. And these folks, these former surfers, I think some of them still surf, they did this, you know what I mean? And so what you were saying earlier, Elizabeth, regarding UCSB, I just want to put – I'm not from Ventura, but I just want to put a little plug in there for the Ventura,
yes,
flagship store of Patagonia.
Absolutely.
And then one more hopeful thing I wanted to add, let me see, I came up with this, is that Doge, you know who Doge is.
Oh, yes.
They tried to fire more than 1,000 National Park Service workers, probationary workers. Mm-hmm. And then about a month ago, that was found to be illegal. And so all those more than 1,000 National Park Service people are being reinstated. And that includes 6 people who work at the Channel Islands National Park, just off the coast of Santa Barbara and Oxnard.
That is
so
good news.
I just want to let people know, like, there's positive stuff out there. I know there's a lot of negative stuff out there, but, you know, it's good to remember and to know about present, you know, positive stuff going on. And that's all I wanted to add.
I agree, Bing. Thank you so much for calling, because that is good news. And I think that is part of why I invited Ara to be here today, because I want people to feel energized, like the 20 million people who walked out the door on April 22nd, 1970, not really knowing what the outcome was or really what it is they could ask for, but just knowing, as you were talking about, Ara, just knowing you've been called to do something. I can no longer sit on the sidelines. They kept coming out, and that's what brought us the Environmental Protection Act, Endangered Species Act, Clean Air, Clean Water. And just as a side note, all those positive things continue to need to be addressed, because much of those original protections have been gutted. And so we need the 20 million people to keep coming and keep coming, like the waves and the waves. Mm. So you've been part of the, you know, because I love that your work has kind of centered around Nipomo in this place of, you know, where you've done your actions. And I don't know if that's where you, you know, you went to Nipomo High School. So the feeling that we need to protect the entire world can feel overwhelming.
Yes.
But if you can bring that community organizing down to one piece of something that you care deeply for or love.
Yes.
What does that look like? And what do you see as the successful steps that people take? Because you talk about being an artist and using music and meditation. So it's...
Right. That's where my journey took me. And I love this question about what are the steps. I think I outlined it maybe not totally in a linear fashion, but one is, can you connect? Who are you and where did you come from? Who came before you?
Mm.
Connecting to your ancestors. Mm-hmm. Whether or not they, you know, did a good job or whatever they lived through that made them the way they were, can we acknowledge what's come before us? Mm-hmm. And then can we, do you feel like you're in your body? Are you, you know, what's your relationship to your own embodiment? And really taking the time, and if it's 2 weeks or 20 years, to give yourself that time. To love yourself, and from that foundation of self-love to start moving out. And who do you care about?
Mm-hmm.
Who are the people that you're responsible for or that you enjoy and respect? And are you in integrity with your values in your community? And I'm not talking about the whole community, the whole county. I'm saying the people you see on a daily basis, your colleagues, your family, your friends, your chosen family. And so when we come into integrity in terms of the relationships that we care about, that automatically, like I said, begins to resource us. So we have a store to draw upon to start moving out from there. So then I think, you know, I was doing yoga a lot that time period when I was in my early 20s. And there was a teacher I had who always played this same beautiful poem that went something to the effect of, if you want to change the world, you need to change your country. And if you want to change your country, you need to change your community. And if you want to change your community, you need to change your family. If you want to change your family, you need to change yourself. So start with yourself.
Mm.
Yeah. And go up and out from there. And also just acknowledging and respecting that I really see humanity as a multiplicity, that we are one coherent unit. We are a species, which is itself alive, we mm-hmm. could say. And I'm like a bee. I'm one part of that. So we don't all need to do the same things. We don't all need to show up in the same way. It's our responsibility to love, practice, be real about where we're starting. Maybe you're starting where you hate yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay. I hated myself at times too. And see, what would I need to do to get to self-love? Who knows about this?
Right.
Who could I ask for help? Who? And if you don't know anybody, what can you pray for help?
Mm-hmm.
Can you make yourself available in that way? And then coming out from there. So what it's looked like for me is, yes, getting involved in direct action, showing up for young people who have a passion to protect the environment and driving them around, giving them rides, making sure they have food, introducing them to resources, listening to them,
mm-hmm.
honoring their authority, making sure that the people that they're interacting with are also listening to them and honoring their authority. It looks like writing letters to elected officials. It looks like volunteering, which is kind of fun, for an elected official's campaign. It looks like getting really curious about whether the work that you're doing is in alignment with your values and working with a coach or a trusted friend or therapist to figure out a plan for how you might be able to bring your work into alignment with right. your values.
Because those are hard things to do on our own, too.
Yeah.
As you mentioned, you can have a thought and feeling on your own, but when you join that with other people who are like-minded, if it's more powerful, we're greater as the whole.
Yes.
And when you talk about the love piece, I think of an interview I did with a man who's called Four Arrows last year. And he said, you know, humans, when they get active, tend to blame humans and want to hate humans for what's happening on Earth. But humans are also an essential part of the ecology.
That
there are actions of the humans on the planet. They're important for the wellness of all of the other species. And that was such a pivotal experience for me to have him say that, you know, that we can't hate humanity and, you know, curse humanity and heal the planet, because humanity is as important a species as all the other species.
Mm.
That always felt really powerful to me. Our number is 805-781-3875. And Greg, welcome to the conversation. Oh. What's on your mind today?
Hi, ladies. Great show, great subject matter.
Thank you.
You know,
and listening to your show today and observations I've made, God, now that I'm in my 70s, I realize having grown up in Southern California in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, I got to experience that paradise-like place before it was completely paved over. And I got the benefit, not because I was particularly nerdy or in tune. I just happened to fall in love with insects, butterflies. Mm-hmm. They were all over the place. I became a reptile expert. I collected snakes because they're one of the most fascinating creatures on the planet. Fish. I lived in Newport Beach, so we were constantly fishing and experiencing the ocean. I had the great benefit of living in that natural surrounding before it got paved over. And now here on the Central Coast, I have homework for the mommies and daddies and the mothers and fathers out there.
And grandparents.
And great grandparents. They've got great messages to deliver to the new generations. Please teach your children well about nature. It's our job as adults to really tune kids into what beauty nature has and possesses. It's astounding. And in this culture that we have developed, that so often gets missed. And it's up to the mommies, like I said, mommies, daddies, the entire family heritage needs to convey that. And I hope and pray they will.
I agree. Thank you, Greg. I appreciate that because it kind of brings me back to around what I said earlier, which is that fundamental growth that happens from infancy to the age of 5, that brain development, that last quarter of the brain gets developed. So if we were allowing our children to be out in the dirt and looking at insects and being able to connect, it's going to instill in them that connection to Mother Earth without us having to teach them, because they already have that natural alignment. They just need to be put out there in order to make those connections. So it's a natural connection. So Ara, I'd like to kind of connect the work that you're doing, the community organizing, also to the work that you've been doing with YTT Northern Chumash Tribal Chair Mona Olivas Tucker, because there are things that are changing that I think are also important in protecting the planet that people can take action on right now.
Oh, yes, absolutely. If you feel resourced and energized and want something to do today, you should know that there is a bill, an assembly bill coming before the California Assembly. It's going to come before the Natural Resources Committee sometime April 28th or 29th. It's called AB 52. It's being put forth by Assemblymember Aguiar Curry, sponsored by 3 federally recognized tribes. And this bill is intended to strip, quote unquote, non-federally recognized California tribes of their right to government consultation. So that's a lot of legal speak. You see, this is where my journey has taken me.
Yes.
What does that mean? So there are many, many non-federally recognized California tribes here in the state, one of which is Yaqtee Chuteechu Yaqtilhini Northern Chumash, of which Mona Olivas Tucker, the honorable chair, leads now. And so it means that these are the people, the survivors, really, of what has happened here, who have lived here for tens of thousands of years. Their grandmothers are buried here. Their grandmothers' grandmothers, their grandmothers' grandmothers' grandmothers are buried here. There is nobody on the Central Coast, or, you know, this applies for different tribes throughout the state. Nobody knows this land better than the original stewards. And so why is AB 52 alarming? It would strip the original stewards of their right to consult with the state of California about environmental policy and about protection of cultural sites, including burial grounds, but not limited to that. So these are the most, definitely the wisest in terms of the tens of thousands of years of cultural wisdom that has been intentionally cultivated, and also the most knowledgeable about what is going on in this place and who are all of the beings, you know, who are the oak trees, who are the dolphins, and where are the sacred sites, which places have been, you know, to use Darsha Navaez's term?
Navaez, yes.
Thank you. Evolved nests, places for young people to receive that connection. We really need them. All of us need non-federally recognized California tribes to weigh in on and be influential on environmental policy. So if you want to support and protect tribal sovereignty here in California, you can write to your assembly member here, that would be Dawn Addis, mm-hmm. and say, ask her to please oppose the amendments to AB 52. You have to go to her website. I wish I had it memorized, but if you Google assembly member Dawn Addis, go to her website. She has a contact form. Send a message. It takes 5 minutes.
And that's a personal action item that you can take that connects you
yes.
to the world around you. Because as you talked about, you know, the love piece, when you love something, you feel motivated to protect it. When you love something, you feel filled and supported. And so I love the idea, we're using love quite a bit, of focusing on, yes, the ways that we can connect internally. And as I mentioned before, it's difficult to take action from a place of fear or hate, because those two emotions freeze us.
Yeah.
You know, they freeze us from action. When we feel hate or anger or resentment, mm-hmm. The motions we take forward are not healing motions. They tend to be harming for ourselves, for our own psyche, and to others. And yeah. so to get into that place of love and be able to move forward, love empowers us to take action in a whole
yes.
different way. So
yes.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because that was not kind of in the direction I was going, but I love that I love, again, that reminder that when we love something, we want to protect it. It encourages us to move. If we go from a place of fear or hate, it freezes us and makes our actions not as accessible. Our time went so fast. Please, if people wanted to connect with you and work with you, how do they find you?
Oh, yeah. Easy. Ara, okay. A-R-A, at ara4, that's the number, always.com.
Ara?
At ara4always.com.
And
email
so
me.
People
yeah.
can email you and find out how to connect, get involved, maybe find their own voice.
Yes, absolutely. And if you have any questions about how to weigh in today on AB 52, I'd be happy to answer them. We have letter templates. There's all kinds of resources.
Great.
So all you need to do is show up and ask for help, and it's here for you.
Thank you. Ara Costello, you are a gift and a joy. Thank you so much for coming in and spending Earth Day with me today. This has been A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can send me an email at elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Find me on Facebook. Find me on Instagram. Listen to previous shows. Podcast us through Spotify. Share the love. And I look forward to continuing this conversation next Tuesday at 2 right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
What about sunrise? What about rain? What about all the things that you said we were to gain? What about killing fears? Is there a time? What about all the things that you said was yours and mine? Did you ever stop to notice all the blood we've shed before? Did you ever stop to notice this crying earth, this weeping shore? Crying earth this week.